Welcome to Synthaholics, your weekly shot of Star Trek. This is David Duncan, and with me is...
Aaron O'Brien.
Holly Michelle.
We're back after some Technoclite difficulties. We've got new methods, and hopefully you'll be hearing this one.
Yes, hopefully.
We finally talked Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And nothing.
And then my ghost apparently deleted it.
We talked too much shit about David not watching Doctor Who, and that's what happened.
The master came in and erased it.
Yeah, I must have done that in my sleep somehow.
Well, you're not the master.
Actually progested.
Oh.
No. Astral projecting.
Projected.
Something like that.
So we didn't get that episode out. We had a technical glitch that I just couldn't get in to fix. It was too much, you know, so. Sorry, everyone.
Oh, did you try turning it off and turning it back on again?
I did multiple times, and I kept on checking if I was in the right universe, but no, I was in the correct one, unfortunately.
Uh-oh. You know what's funny? When I edit videos in the software I use, sometimes I have to open it and then delete it and then open it again in order for any sound to be actually in the recording.
Okay, that's weird.
That's not normal.
Yeah, no, it's like a beta thing, but. Yeah, it sucks. For the first year, I was like, yeah, I don't know. It's my camera. My camera's not recording sound, guys. I don't know. I can't use this.
Yeah. That's weird. So
that's
crazy.
That's unusual. But
Glitchy.
The latest short track just came out a couple days ago with Ye Olde Harry Mudd, the escape artist.
Yes, we got Rainn Wilson being reprising Harry Mudd.
Although the title's a misnomer.
Yeah, I guess it is.
And this episode raises way, way more questions than it answers, and so it kind of made me upset.
Really? Okay. So do we want to just give in full spoilers on this?
Yeah, full spoilers for the escape artist. Or the not escape artist, as we should say.
So, yeah, if you haven't seen it and you want to keep it, maybe just fast forward about a good 15 minutes or so, and we'll probably be done talking about it then. But we open up, we get Harry Mudd. He's being delivered by some kind of
female looking. She sounds just like Princess Leia in Return of the Jedi. Sounds just Bosk, like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. So, yeah, a bounty hunter giving it over to a Tellarite. So we got a great Tellarite. I thought you'd be happy about that, Dave. The makeup looked great on the Tellarite.
The makeup was great, and apparently Harry Mudd fucked his sister.
Yeah. he stole their like family cudgel.
Family cudgel. And, he talked about, how, this is
her
a little
whiskers.
Bit later. Her whiskers and her, massaging her tusks while they were being intimate. I'm like, oh, that's so gross.
Yeah, but we get this whole string of Harry Mudd's being basically captured by different people and trying to talk his way out using the same kind of methods. Of, I'm part of a resistance against the Federation, I have money, these kind of things.
Or I'm poor, there's nothing you can get from me, he's either super rich or I have nothing.
Or I'll beg, I'll do anything kind of thing, so.
I'll clean your latrines, I'll do anything you need.
And we see him, being held by, obviously the Tellarite. Klingons, the Orions, and then there was some other race, a real short race that I don't even know who she was supposed to be.
I got the impression that she was short for her race.
Yeah, I don't know. So we're seeing, and it's kind of funny to see all these iterations of him being...
doing the same shtick.
Yeah. Trying to get out, weasel his way out.
I think the Orion one was probably my favorite because it was just funny because the guy was so dumb.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you idiot, you're on camera.
You're on camera. And then Harry Mudd hears it and he still tries to seduce the woman.
To be fair, though, he didn't actually... he really didn't actually say anything other than, I would look good in a cape. That's literally the only thing he agreed to.
Yeah. But it was funny, just the whole thing, and just very comical. And then we get the Tellarite deliver Harry Mudd to a Federation ship.
And then the Federation ship was super fuzzy. Like, they just didn't fully design it. So they just took a giant blur filter to it. So it's just like this blurry, roughly Federation-shaped ship.
And then when it comes on board of the Federation ship, they're not very excited to see him. And then when they finally explain to the Tellarite that there's been a whole bunch of people bringing in these Harry Mudds, and they're just these really crappy androids that have been mass produced. And he opens a room and you see like at least, you know, 8 to 10 Harry Mudds, and they all keep on saying the same things.
If I was free, I'd be sipping on a whatever it was called.
Yeah. And then after that happens, we see on the ship, we see a bunch of Harry Mudds doing a bunch of menial work on the bridge. And there's that bounty hunter boss looking lady with the armor and the face on, takes it off. And it is Harry Mudd. And you see that he's using these replicants of him to make money. So
I've got so many questions. This is why the thing irks me so much. Are these the androids from the Andromeda Galaxy?
No. Well, maybe, but I doubt it. Because this is before.
Well, I know it's before, but the thing is, like, you know, if he's got access to the thing, because they could make the same robot over and over and over again, but these seem way crappier than those ones, and those were able to take over the Enterprise, like just one of them. And so I don't know, I feel like they're trying to tap into that original episode where he's got all the robots, he's on the planet with the robots. I don't know if it's just homage or if they're trying to say he's already gotten access to that place. Second of all, was the real Harry Mudd the Harry Mudd on the Klingon ship? Was the one that came and killed Lorca also a robot over and over again? Like, was it the same robot? Like, I have so many issues with this. Like, it just
penetrating calls, a whale.
Penetrating a whale. It calls so much into question, like, what Harry Mudd did. Was the Harry Mudd in the TOS episodes, was he a robot? Like, it's just, it makes me sad. Like, it's just. Everything
that should make you excited. Means there are so many possibilities, and it's making you sad.
Yeah, it makes
you
sad.
Be excited.
I don't know anything anymore. Everything's been fun. No, it's not fun. It's opposite of fun.
That's why most people get invested in these shows to be wowed and to
have their curiosity tickled. Like, what could that be? See, that's to me. It's like, you know, Dave, you know, we've been talking about Trek for a while now. I love just the wacky sci-fi, that anything is possible in sci-fi. It's almost like fantasy with a thin veneer of science on top of it, you know. So
I know, but like I like storytelling where I can understand what's going on. This has just pulled the rug out from everything I knew about Harry Mudd, and that kind of makes me sad.
You're not always supposed to know what's going on, buddy.
And what if it's not those androids from I Mudd, that episode I Mudd back in the original series? What if it's just he got his hands on a android replicating machine, and he, you know. They're not very good replicants. They just do the job what they need to do, just to fool these bounty hunters so he can cash in on them.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, that would make me feel a bit better, but we don't know.
You know what would probably make this whole episode better for you? If you actually saw that on his ship he had some kind of android replicating machine, and that he was pumping them out.
Like, if you just saw them step off one after the other, I'd feel a lot better about it. Just, I don't know, it just calls into question everything we've seen with Harry Mudd. Like, were they all robots?
It wouldn't make sense if you just look, chronologically, that it would be the androids from the I Mudd episode, because before, when they meet Mudd's women, like, was that first season? Or I think it's first season of the original series, you know, he doesn't have androids.
Not that we know of.
Not that we know of. Maybe he did. Maybe he was on his
That was an android Harry Mudd. We don't know. That's the problem. We don't know anything about Harry Mudd anymore.
It's a good point. It's a good point.
That's what makes me so upset. Because, like, you know, the robot Harry Mudds were definitely inferior to the original one. So maybe that's right. Why he kept getting caught by Kirk.
And wasn't in iMud, weren't there different ranges of how good he could make the androids? Like, some were higher levels and lower levels. I can't quite remember. Or am I mixing up what little girls are made out of? The one with the Lurch character. I can't remember. It's been a while since we did Androids Going Wild.
Yeah, either one of them. Yeah, I don't remember which one is which, but it's just, I don't know. Like, I don't like all the short treks to me have always, you know, left more questions open or, you know, than they answered. And it's just, that's just what's kind of like has irked me about them. And this one especially, because I thought the escape artist was going to be about how he escaped from the Klingon ship and how he got all that. And it wasn't that. So I was kind of disappointed on two measures because I was like, oh, look, that'll be that story about how he and Stewart escaped. And then it wasn't. I was like,
oh. How about you, Holly?
I mean, I thought it was a fun episode. And I think it's neither here nor there. It's all speculation, as David so detests. but I did think it would have been cool if the head that they were using to pump out these Harry Mudds would have been the real Harry Mudd. I thought that would have been cool.
Oh, that little head that you saw in the beginning?
Yeah, like when you first see the little factory.
Yeah. That would be cool. Like, use the dreams of Harry Mudd. Yeah. Who knows? Maybe it was.
I don't know if he's real anymore. They're all... yeah.
I know, right? Anything could happen.
Nothing is real anymore. How about you, Aaron? What'd you think?
Actually, this is the first short trek that I really enjoyed. The Tilly one is fun. It's cute. Don't get me wrong, but it's like, I kind of felt the same way as you did. I think she was the best part of it. The whole, alien, princess or, you know, to be married or whatever was a little bit, okay, what is that about? Is this tying into anything or is this a standalone? The Calypso made no sense to me other than just, it's a short story set in Star Trek. The Saru one, it's beautiful. Beautiful episode, but it's kind of Prime Directive breaking really threw me off on that one. And then this one I thought was just so much just a romp. I love Harry Mudd because he can break all the rules.
I love Harry Mudd too, and Rainn Wilson actually directed it. I mean, he did a good job directing it. I just wasn't crazy about the story. I mean, it was fun. I had a couple expectations that were just not met, so that's what hurt me, my view of it.
I thought that the ship, the bridge of the ship for the Tellarite, I thought it was a little chintzy. I could see some of the...
Well, it's obviously a redress of the Discovery Bridge, which is also a redress of the Brig, because they have that big shape where the view screen is. So, like, it's a... The bridge...
I don't know. Honestly, it didn't look like the Discovery Bridge. It looked really... I saw some of the piping and stuff like that. I could see the paint on some of them. I just kind of, like... wasn't high-end that I'm coming to expect to see.
Look at the brig and on the Discovery. It's got that light shape around where to hold the person. That's the exact same shape that's the view screen. It's also the same shape of the light that was around the view screen of the Tellarite ship. So it's that same set is redressed for different things. Unless they have that giant shape for no reason all over the ship.
I'm sure they redress a lot of things, yeah. Just there's something about that set didn't up to snuff. That was I was like, well, that's kind of weird. I thought they'd do a little better in certain things. So.
They just piled a whole bunch of stuff on the bridge to make it look a little different.
Right, yeah. Well, I enjoyed it. Sorry, Dave, that left more questions and made you not into it as much. And I know it seems like Holly seemed to at least somewhat enjoy it. I know, Holly, you didn't like the Harry Mudd episode, his standalone one with the whale. That wasn't your favorite.
No, it wasn't my favorite. And I actually laughed at this one, so.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of little laughing moments in there, to me.
And, oh, yeah. It was funny. It was cute. And, it had some fun things in it. I just was hoping for something different narratively.
Right.
I think it's neat how all of these treks, though, have touched on the character's personality.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, Like, it may not be about the story. It may just be about who the person is when they're faced with these situations.
And maybe these, are just have nothing to do with the episodes. I mean, the second season. They're just short little stories.
Yeah, you know. I'd love to see Harry Mudd again in the series proper, though. I love Harry Mudd. I love the concept of him. I love Rainn Wilson, how he plays him. It's really good.
He's great. Yeah, he really does nail that character. It does it justice, I would say.
Well, apparently he's still rocking the beard because I saw a T-Mobile commercial today with Rainn Wilson then rocking the Harry Mudd beard. So apparently that's how he's doing now. So maybe he is doing more for Discovery. Who knows?
Nice. we are going on to another episode. This is by request.
Yeah, we have an email request. It was actually requested in the second email, but we're going to go ahead and talk the episode he wanted to talk about. That's Tuscany. Tuscany.
No.
Tsunkate?
Yes. Tsunkate.
Tsunkate. Tsunkate.
Tsunkate. It's the TS is a weird. It's actually, I think it's Japanese, but but the TS is a Japanese kind of thing that they use. Really weird. If we had Guy Davis, he could probably tell us all about it right now.
Oh yeah.
Because he speaks fluent Japanese, so
nice.
It just whenever I see the word, I'm thinking like Tuscany, Kate Skinny.
So this is a Voyager episode. This is season 6, episode 15, and it first aired February 9th, 2000. Dave,
in the year 2000.
This is a fun episode because we see some, I guess, a little different in some ways because we see
three big guest stars.
Mm-hmm. Well, we get this opening scene of not a boxing match, but sort of like an MMA fight. And we have a crowd surrounding a arena, and they're all, you know, cheering and yelling. And we see within the crowd, we see some Starfleet people. And you're like, whoa, Starfleet people.
Why are they cheering a blood sport? That's weird.
So unlike the Federation. So as we go, it comes out, we see a Hirogen walk out. And he's dressed to fight, and there's another humanoid alien comes out, and they have these glowing boxing gloves of sort, and then their shoes have some glowing bits to it too. So when they're hitting each other,
space Nikes,
and while they're punching, every once in a while it gives them like a charge when they hit certain spots, and at the very end the Hirogen is successful, and people are all cheering, and they start cheering that Tsunkate, so
Tuscany.
Don't think it's that. So and you're left seeing like, okay, so what's going on with the Federation? Is this the Voyager crew?
Well, it cuts back to the audience, and you've got like the evil Chakotay grinning with like this gleeful spice.
Yeah. He kicked his ass, didn't he? So
he had such a boner for that fight.
He did. So he's got this. The Voyager next part is the Voyager is orbiting a planet. This is Norsica Prime. And Janeway is going on a little vacation. And she's going to go visit another planet far away just to do some studies. That's because that's what she likes to do. And Chakotay is in command. And she's kind of giving him a laundry list of things to do while she's gone. And when she's off, B'Elanna Torres is like, hey, you know, this fight and this fight, you want to go back and see that? And he's like, I got to be captain. Sorry. And she's like, delegate.
You would abuse my power? And of course, because he only needs a slight nudge, then he abuses his power, just like the terrible first officer he is.
I did think it was kind of like, he's a little, not terrible, but a little slimy in this episode, just the way he's like, yeah, somebody else will deal with that. So.
And then he puts her on duty.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to go see the fight.
He's so slimy.
Yeah,
but it was kind of a compliment as well, though.
Yeah, I guess. But, you know, Janeway wouldn't have done that. Totally wouldn't. Yeah. But, you know. But anyways.
She would just go to a holodeck, find the guy she likes, then take out all the bad parts of his programming and turn him into a different person. That's all she would do.
Rips out his heart. We won't be needing this anymore. Nope. So we find Neelix is cooking some unappetized looking lemonade, and this is something he's
Jizzinade.
Slush of some sort.
It is something for a sunburn, which apparently he burned himself pretty bad on
On Tatooine.
Yes, exactly. right next to the moisture farms.
Right next to the moisture farms. He's so close to getting some moisture on that face, but he fell asleep.
And so he's trying to fix himself, and he's got a pretty bad sunburn.
That's so unsanitary, making like weird medicine around all your food.
Yeah, it's just another strike against Neelix in my book. So when they tell him about the fights, the matches they're going to, Neelix is sort of on the fence. He's like, I kind of didn't think you guys would be into that. And he's like, that's great, you know. And then 7 and 9 and Tuvok walk in, and they're like, well, you know, what did she say? It's like pointless, crude and pointless kind of thing. And then her and Tuvok are going to go to a nebula that's collapsing. That's like, you know, hours away.
Sciencey stuff. We're going to do boring sciencey stuff on vacation.
Right.
That's not boring to everyone.
Well, yeah, no. Some people like science.
All they do all the time on Star Trek is science.
That's what they do. It's what they like.
Take a break from science for one episode, guys.
Yeah.
Maybe it won't get you captured. Science gets you captured and sold in slavery.
It does. Science does. I mean, Star Trek does prove that science always gets you captured or in trouble of some sort.
Or sold in slavery. So, guys,
every
out there,
time.
It's curiosity what did it.
Really. No matter how inspirational Star Trek is, never go into science.
Never go into space. It just will kill you. You know, if anything, Archer and Janeway are two examples of everyone's like, I wonder what's that about? Oh, there's bad guys here.
Don't do that. Yeah, I'm just kidding. Sciences are great. You should always go into sciences. This is a bad joke for me.
Don't poke at the nebula.
Don't pull at its udders.
A nebula has udders?
Hey, they produce stars, right? So they got to come from somewhere, right?
It's utterly ridiculous.
You think they come out of udders?
Why not?
Well, I feel like udders mainly produce milk.
Hey, nebulas produce stars. That's how they produce them.
There's coffee creamer in that nebula.
Magic udders. All I can picture is the weird little tit ball from the from old Greg.
From what?
From you guys what? Know what I'm talking about, right?
No,
old Greg.
Old Greg.
Old Greg? I'm old Greg.
Nope.
I don't even know.
Oh my God.
What's it from?
The show is called, I'll tell you what the show is called. It's a BBC show.
Little Britain?
Not Little Britain.
Are you talking Red Dwarf?
The Mighty Boosh. It's from The Mighty Boosh.
I'm not familiar.
You guys really don't know old Greg.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Sorry.
Well, it's not surprising from you, David, but it is.
You're welcome, Holly. You're welcome.
Oh, my God.
Is that a newer show, Holly?
Negative.
Oh, it's older, huh?
It's older. I hope your listeners are shaking their heads at you right now. And hopefully they've all heard
every time I make a music reference, they shake their head at me like Aaron does.
I'm sure.
You got better, Greg, Dave.
There is a musical
Thanks
number
to Kaylee.
In Greg, so.
There is a musical number, okay.
Yeah. Love games. Actually, there are multiple, and that's where the tit ball comes into play.
All right, this is going down a very deep well.
I guess we'll just have to like look up Titball on YouTube at some point and see what this is.
Or you can just watch.
But don't do it at work. Do not do it at work.
Definitely do it at work. Also, look up Meat Spin.
No.
Oh my God.
All right.
It's got magic milk that comes out of it. It gives you the funk.
Gives you the funk, huh?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Sounds about right. Yeah. Yep.
I'm sorry, but that's all I can picture now. So move on, please.
All right. So the nebula. Back to nebulas. So they take off to go to the nebula, Tuvok and Seven, and while they're doing out there, of course, they get captured. So someone beams a bomb, which is actually pretty ingenious. It has a little like shield around it, so he
beams
can't even
turn it.
Beams a
bomb with a shield around it. It's fantastic. And Tuvok sticks his face in it because he thinks it's a good idea.
And the bomb goes off, and then they black out, and the next thing you see is Seven. She's in a bunk in some barracks. And
I'll beam a bunk.
And we see this this guy with this really shitty looking Fu Manchu.
It's
and
Leon. Jeffrey Combs.
And he's basically like the ringmaster of these matches, and he takes these steals these fighters and throws them into this arena. And
steals people, makes them fighters, and puts them into the arena.
Yeah, kidnapping and
sold them to slavery, basically.
And he wants, because Seven is a Borg, he's like, you'd be perfect. We'd love to see you fight. And she's like, I'm not going to fight. And when they bring in Tuvok, he's all blown up and he's all burnt. And she's like, take care of him. And he's like, well, it all depends on if you're going to fight. Maybe we'll take care of him. Maybe we won't. And she's like, all right, I'll fight. But you will take care of him. So she is going to go to a blue match. And then we do see the Hirogen that we saw in the very first opening scene. And he's like in the opposite bunk from her. And he's like, the guy wanted to put her in a red match, which means to the death. And he's like, start out a little slow. Why don't you do a blue match first? So this is where she's going to go.
And the Hirogen Hunters, played by none other than our good friend, or I guess good acquaintance, J.G. Hertzler, who we met at the Nickel City Con.
Yes.
And got to speak to. He's a great guy.
He is really a fantastic human being. Very fun.
If you ever get a chance to meet J.G. Hertzler, do it.
Charisma 20 on that one, for sure.
I'm sure he's got he's got an extra 10 modifier on that.
He's over the top. He's just very charismatic. Yeah, very charismatic. Pretty cool guy. So we get so that's where she's at in Tuvok at the moment, and then we jump back to the Voyager. We get Paris and Harry Kim and Tuvok and
Belana Torres. Tuvok's not there.
Not Tuvok. I'm Belana Torres, Chakotay. That's what I meant to say. Not Tuvok. And
Tuvok's all burnt in the bunk.
Tuvok's all burnt.
From that nebula udder, it got too close and it burnt him.
Yes, that big ball of tits or whatever.
Titball,
yeah. It's that like Powerball, but titball. So they're talking about shifting duties and stuff like that. And they're just trying to figure out, it's kind of like a back and forth about how Chakotay is a boxer, and he knocked out a lot of people, apparently. Do you believe that?
The doctor just believes it to be a savage pastime.
Yes, and so the doctor is taking care of Neelix.
I believe that Chakotay believes it.
And Neelix is like allergic to the bomb he made.
Yeah.
So he's having a reaction to it. So the doctor gives him some medicine, and then he invites him to go down to him to see these beetles or something like that. Beetle larvae at this museum.
Alien bugs or alien fisticuffs? Which one will I do?
What should I pick? And the choice is obvious.
The larvae for the win.
So they go down to the Tsunkate's match, and it's Chakotay and Paris and Kim, and Neelix is down there as well. And they're watching, and who comes out is The Rock.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And this is when he was just known as The Rock and not his full name, because in the credits it's just The Rock.
And not as he has gotten a lot more buff since then.
He's
so
a chubby little kid in this episode compared to what he looks
so
like now.
It's weird to see him tattooless.
Yes, and but you see him now, he is over the top huge. Now, believe me, this guy is huge in this episode.
I feel like
in 2000.
He's grown a foot too.
In 18 years since this episode was made, I mean, he's just gotten more buff, more extreme. It's pretty remarkable. I can't even get over it. So, I mean, the only thing he's lost is his hair.
Yeah, pretty.
Now
pretty
he's got
much
the shaved head. Yeah,
right.
So,
But I mean, like, in the episode, he comes out, he does his eyebrow thing, like he does when he was wrestling, and he does his wrestling finishing move to 7 of 9. So this is actually a crossover, because I guess he was coming to WWF. It was WWF SmackDown then, and I guess he had a big match that night.
Were you a big wrestling fan there, Dave?
I was not. I just knew there was a crossover, because I remember watching this on UPN, and there was a whole bunch of hubbub about this episode because of the wrestling that was coming on. I think it played right after Voyager.
Gotcha. Yeah. So we got the we get 7-9 walks out, and they're just completely shocked, and they can't believe this is that she's there.
Beam her out.
They try to beam her out, and it's not working because she's technically not there, which they don't know at this very moment. So,
they're a hologram.
It's like a hologram that's being projected down in there in the arena below, and when they start fighting, 7 does hold her own, but it's just that she doesn't have the killer instincts. It's just not what she really wants to do. It's not what she's about. And
so she holds back a lot, actually.
She holds back quite a bit. And then every time she kind of hesitates to maybe put a finishing blow or, put the heat on The Rock.
Takes advantage.
Yes, exactly. And at some point, she gets...
I don't wish to fight you anymore. Well, I do.
She gets defeated, and basically that's the end of the fight. And this is where obviously they go back up to the bridge, and they are like, "We got to figure out where she is and find out where 7 and Tuvok is." Janeway is coming back to Voyager, but she's a couple hours away, so it's going to take her a while to get back. I guess Neelix, they send them to go talk to their ambassadors, which is always a great idea, don't you think?
Always the best thing.
Just wonder, what's your position there? I'm the cook.
Yes, because Neelix is always going to be helpful in a desperate situation.
I think he's. He's not, it's not that he's personable. He's just like
disarming.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll give him that. He's disarming. But I mean, wouldn't you rather have like Chakotay go and talk to the people in charge?
Oh my God! What's wrong with this face?
Kind of a head.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean, you really want someone who's not threatening.
Well, they hired Neelix to be
the liaison,
and yeah, even though he's like the person you probably least want to do it, but because he's a familiar face to other Delta Quadranters, and humans aren't so familiar because they have smooth faces and like no weird things popping out of their face, their head.
That's right. These smooth face people give us the bumpy head.
They're not frightening.
So 7 wakes up from her fight, and we see that the Hirogen is trying to help her with this medical device, and she doesn't want him around, but then he's like, "Hey, look, I'm trying to help you," and it's kind of get into her head, like, your strategy, I mean, you're a great fighter, but your strategy, you're just not going in for the kill. And he's trying to help her say, if you're going to survive here, you got to basically have that killer instinct kind of thing. So there's no difference. And he says there's no difference between a survivor and a champion here. So yeah. you gotta be one and the same. So next, the ringmaster guy comes in, and he says, he's got two seals on balancing balls. On those. He said, because people hate the Borg so much, every time you took a big hit or you fell down or were thrown around, people just were tuning in more and more and wanted to see this fight. So
imagine how much more we'll watch you die. It seems like he's like cutting his losses really quick.
Yeah. Like, wouldn't you want to like string that out?
Yeah, shouldn't you just want to watch her get beat down over and over and over again until she doesn't want to live anymore? Like, that seems like you'd get a lot more viewers that way. Like, just getting her to die in her second match seems kind of dumb.
Right. So after the ringmaster leaves, the Hirogen and 7 kind of come together, and she's like, "Yeah, teach me on how to to win this match." So the Hirogen and 7 start working together, and I guess there's this book of Sankate, and it's just Tuscany, and it's just basically these maneuvers and attacks and how to hit the spots that are their sensors that are on them. They go through a long kind of like Karate Kid, Mr. Miyagi thing teaching each
wax
other.
Wax on, wax off.
That's it. I wish they put that in there. So
keep dropping your elbow.
So Neelix comes back to the Voyager, and he is unsuccessful. And
like we knew he would be.
Yes, and they do find out that they're looking for where the actual fights are taking place, because they realize it's not on the planet that it's being broadcast, and they realize it keeps moving, so it's a spaceship that's moving from system to system.
It was a flight pattern rather than like a satellite.
Yeah, like one
transmission.
Right, one spot. So they're going to go track down the ship, and they let obviously let Janeway know that they can come chase after and try to save Seven and Tuvok. So from there, the fight begins between Seven and this red match, the match to the death. And who is it?
The Hirogen Hunter. It's so sad. He's such a big part of this episode. They didn't ever bother give him a name.
Yeah, he doesn't really have a name. It's kind of stinky.
In Memory Alpha and IMDb, he's just credited as Hirogen Hunter.
Yeah.
Poor JG. Come on, give him a name. They could have just called him JG.
Give him one name at least. So so the fight begins, and obviously Seven's completely thrown off because she, you know, kind of likes the guy, I think. And he's kind of like, I'm just tired of fighting. He's like, I've been doing it for 19 years. Just want it to end. The one thing he brings up that before is that he lost his son during one of their hunts.
Son's first hunt.
Right. And when he was kidnapped. So there from there, the Voyager catches up with the arena ship. And basically wants the Tuvok and Seven back, and they're like, oh, they're busy right now. Call back later. And
they're indisposed at the moment. They're in the bathroom.
I got the diarrhea. So Chakotay just starts firing on the ship. The ship is much bigger and tougher than Voyager, and they're basically saying, you know, we're outclassed. And
the bigger they are, the harder they fall. All these really bad fighting puns in this episode.
I know. You're like, oh, the eyes roll. Come on, Chakotay. They wrote that line for you and you delivered it that way?
Robert Beltran's not very good.
I know. You love him. And so outside, obviously, Voyager's attacking the ship. In the inside of the ship, the fight between Seven and Hirogen is going on. And again, Seven is... She holds her own for sure, but she just doesn't want to kill. That's not in her. And
instead doesn't want to kill someone who like prepped her and gave her all this, you know, mentorism. Like she likes likes that he mentored her.
Right. Well, and also then she also says, you just mentored me because you could see all my weaknesses and how I fight. So, and he's like, yeah, that's part of it, but.
I do want to help you. I don't
think he says, yeah, that's part of it.
He doesn't. He's like, yeah, sort of. He kind of called me out on that.
you're not wrong.
He just wanted to make sure that he was going to die.
I just need to know how far the split suit can go down.
So they start during the fight. Voyager just keeps takes some pretty bad hits, and their shield goes down. They realize, which I thought right away, just cut the transmission, shoot all their satellite.
Yes, they're all satellite dishes. A bunch of DirecTV dishes all
around. Yeah, take the DirecTV see everyone come out of the ship. You know, I mean, it's like, that would be my first thought.
Or get some snow and just put some snow on the dishes. That way they lose the signal.
We've been jammed. Raspberry.
Raspberry. You can always jam them.
So, right at that point when Voyager's pretty much there. Out of the fight, who comes in is Janeway
on the Delta Flyer.
Dun, da, da, dun, dun, da, da. You're like, the Delta Flyer is going to do it, and
right.
It's a big shuttlecraft. Like, why is this thing? How does it fit on Voyager? First of all,
maybe it attaches to it.
And third of all, what's it going to do?
He
get in close enough while evading.
Yeah, maybe they can do that, and all they're really trying to do is cut the transmission.
Yeah, just the extra phasers. But Voyager only has like 12 phaser strips that it could shoot from. But whatever. Who's counting?
Who's counting? So back on the ship with the arena fight, Seven is going to win, and going to give the deciding blow is when...
Oh, it's because he called her imperfect, and so she just loses it.
Just you, me, imperfect?
Can't tell that to a pretty Borg.
Yeah, so just when she's...
I think he said weak.
He did say imperfect, though.
He specifically said imperfect.
Yeah. Mm. She kind of start really hitting hard after that. After that little insult. And so when she's ready to give the killing blow, that's when they beam her off. They get a lock on her finally. Chakotay and Seven are free, and they beam the Hirogen off as well.
Because they couldn't differentiate between Seven and the Hirogen. Like, just beam them both if you have to.
And they're all, like, mixed together, and now they're this, like, mixed together centaur.
It's like Tuvix. It's Tuvix all over again.
Yeah, it's a centaur. With a Hirogen, you know, bottom. And
a Hirogen with boobs.
It's news, people.
That's exactly what happened.
Although they changed the Hirogen a lot compared to when we first saw them. Because when you first see them, they're like 8 foot tall. And now they're just like the regular size. They didn't feel like making them big anymore.
Maybe he was short for his first race.
No,
there are different sizes.
Even in the holographic episode one, they're not that much bigger. They used to be huge in the first couple episodes you see them, and they're like, yeah, let's just not make them big anymore.
Yeah. So obviously they're saved, and Voyager obviously just gets out of there. And back on the sick bay, the doctor's treating Seven's injuries, and the Hirogen's there as well. And the Hirogen asked Seven if she was really going to kill him, and she was like, I really don't know. He's like, it was like that moment she didn't know if she was going to actually do it or not. So and the Hirogen said he's off to find his lost son that he lost during his first hunt. So then their final scene, we get Seven is in the astrometrics lab, and this is when Tuvok enters, and we get this great exchange.
Ask her how she feels.
Yeah, I was like, how do you feel? How do you feel?
Which is really weird for Vulcan to ask that question.
Right, so...
It was logical for him to ask.
It's not logical for him to answer.
Yes, it was.
No, it wasn't, because Vulcans don't even know how to answer that question, much less ask it.
It starts with he starts the conversation with, you know, that they both enjoy silences, and... That was his little olive branch of friendship. Like, we are friends. We like to be around each other. And I can see that she's hurting, so I have to say something.
We like science. That's how
friendship works.
Yeah, no, but I thought it was interesting because then he goes...
The sound of silence.
Yes, that's when Simon Garfunkel starts playing.
Or Disturbed.
She... Yeah, I guess. So you could go to, she says, you know, basically she was afraid that she's lost her humanity at that point because she felt guilt. So she's shame and remorse. And he says, you haven't lost your humanity. You know, you reaffirmed it. So, which is great. It was a great thing because he kind of sees like, yeah, you should be feeling those things. And that's a good thing that you feel those. Oh, you're not a psychopath.
Because even though this episode was mostly fighting and beating each other up, you still got a chance to have 7 of 9. Am I human? How am I doing with humanity moment, which most 7 of 9 episodes end up having. So it was kind of nice that they squeezed that in there just at the very last second, because it really wasn't very much of that in this episode. They just kind of like, let's just shoehorn that at the last second, which was, I guess, kind of good. Give a little feel good moment at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so the episode ends. How do we want to do it? Do we want to take our takes, or do we want to do our fan letter first?
Well, the fan letter, it was only the, let's see, the fan letter, the second one is the one, the reply is where he's talked about this episode, because the reason he wanted us to do this episode was he said he'd like to hear some bad rock impressions and wrestling jokes. And what an episode. It's got J.G. Hertzler, Jeffrey Combs. It had the highest ratings of the season and is still despised by many. So I'm interested in your takes. That's just what he replied to. We'll read the actual email after we go over our takes.
See, we didn't do any rock impressions because I didn't know he was looking for that.
I guess I should have read it before. But he doesn't really talk very much in the episode.
No, I mean, other than, you know.
Your mind.
Yeah, basically he's like, I'm going to kick your ass kind of talk. Yeah.
I don't listen to a lot of the rocks. I don't really know. And he's not, like, dumb sounding in most things. So it's not like he's, like, I don't know. I don't even know if I could be able to do a rock impression. I don't know what he sounds like.
He talks pretty straightforward. Yeah, it doesn't sound. He's not like an Arnold Schwarzenegger where you can totally like, you know, lampoon him on his.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
The beach of Dawn.
Right. Do we want to just go around what our thoughts are?
Absolutely. Let's do that. Then we'll do the first email.
Why don't you go first, Dave, since you're back from out of town.
Back from out of town. And it was a good trip. This episode, you know, I remember it being worse than it was. It was a competent episode. I didn't hate it, which is good for Voyager. It's a good middle-of-the-road episode. And like I said, it was sort of a 7 of 9-centric episode. It was a little bit more ensemble-y than Voyager episodes usually are, but they just kind of made it a 7 episode at the end because they did the, like, oh, look, you know, you're remembering your humanity. So they kind of had that that thing at the end. So it was a good episode. It was great to see The Rock in a Star Trek episode. And Jeffrey Combs and J.G. Hertzler. I love Jeffrey Combs and J.G. Hertzler. They're like my favorite Star Trek guest stars. And this is the first and only time they both interact together on screen.
Right, right.
So it's a nice treat to have them both together. And I think this is both of their only appearance on Voyager, which is kind of shocking.
Yeah. Especially the long run of Voyager for sure.
Yeah. It ran for 7 years. It's like Deep Space Nine, and they both had a lot more parts on Deep Space Nine. And then they both came back for Enterprise too. So I was like, why didn't they get more parts on Voyager? Seems like it would have been prime, but who knows? But yeah, it's a really good episode. I mean, it's not a really good episode. It's just a pretty really good, okay episode. I don't have much to complain about. He was wanting our thoughts on it because he said it was mostly despised, and I'm like, I do remember this episode not being as good as it was. I just thought it was dumb, and seeing it again just recently, I'm like, it's not that bad. It's actually pretty competent for Voyager. I mean, there's no, like, huge message other than, like, you know, learning science will get you sold into slavery.
Maybe.
But it's a chance. Right. What about you, Holly?
Well, I thought that the point of the episode was, I mean, pretty kind of in your face. You know, the episode starts, you know, where the crew is going down to this planet for this brawl. And, you know, they all have their own little interests, but they're also, you know, naive to what's really going on at these brawls, these fights. But throughout the entire episode, 7 of 9 is being, you know, questioned about, well, I guess she's not being questioned the whole time, but it's a part of the conversation throughout the episode that she, you know, isn't socializing and that she needs to be different and she needs to change. And
well, that comes up a lot. Doctor's always hopping on her to socialize.
Yes. So I thought that, you know, the affirmation of her present humanity was basically the entire takeaway of the episode. I mean, what does he say? You know, we wouldn't feel that way if they weren't captured, you know, if they weren't taken and for doing this forcefully. So, like,
oh, yeah,
you
know, they enjoyed the sport until they found out it was all slaves, pretty much.
Right. So, like, yeah, I just felt like that was the point of it, that she, I guess I don't know how to say it, but basically, yeah, I don't know how to say it. But
basically, I think you're trying to say
it was a huge focus.
I think you're trying to say that she was the main focus of the episode, and I guess she kind of was, but it just felt a little bit more ensemble-y to me than, like, some episodes where they just focus. I mean, you had Harry Kim in this episode. You had Neelix in this episode. You had players on the episode that sometimes you don't necessarily see when it's, like, a focused on someone else type thing.
Yeah. I just, like, doubt. Like, it just felt that, you know, the expectations of her were in question the entire episode, and probably didn't need to be so much in question.
Do you mean expectations of her character? I guess. Well, I mean, she was thrusted into those arena fights, so she wasn't really like that's not what she was going for.
But not just that, but like the conversation that she has with the doctor before she gets on the ship with Tuvok, and like the fact that she's, you know, she has to address this thing because she feels like she's failing.
Like she Yeah, it's like she was in the shuttle with Tuvok, and says it's been like two some hours since we've said a word to her.
37 minutes and some seconds, and.
And he's like, says, and it's funny because it kind of reminded me of like an old couple, you know, together, you know, they don't need to really say anything. He's like, right. Why do we need to say anything? He says, I'm happy, you're happy. Why do we need to talk? You know, and she's like,
yeah. And I thought it was just rude of the doctor to insinuate that, you know, she has to be around people who are outgoing rather than people like her that enjoy the same things. I just felt I didn't like it. It was a role that he was trying to push upon her, which I do understand is like part of how she got better. But I'm just saying I wasn't a fan.
He wants her to be a social butterfly like him because he wants to get with her, which is what I was hoping they were going to do with the character, that they were going to have them kind of hook up. Because they had the most on-screen chemistry out of everybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I think it's always interesting to see. I mean, I guess Seven's sort of like the Data of this, you know, of this series. You know,
the Data or the Spock.
Trying to find her humanity and trying to, you know, going on a soul searching where most of them kind of know who they are already by the time we're introduced to all the characters. She's a character in development, which is always cool to see.
She's the other, like Spock, Data.
Well, I mean, we have others. I mean, you know, Tuvok is obviously a Vulcan, but he's fully formed. He knows exactly what he wants to be. You know, he's what, probably the oldest out of the whole crew. So, yeah,
since he was around during Star Trek 6 times.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so it's, I don't know. It's, I enjoyed this episode, actually. I don't know what people are knocking this episode for, I'll tell you the truth. This is a really clever episode, cleverly written. You find out that Arena is not actually there. It's being transmitted. That's fantastic. That's a great idea. It's creative. Mm-hmm. The dynamics between the Hirogen and Seven is just fun to watch. And, you know, like you said, J.J. Hertzler is awesome. You know, he's just a great guy to, you know, put in that part. So he's a great guy.
All the charisma. And you've got, you know, three great guest stars. The Rock is, you know, a huge actor now. He's great. Jeffrey Combs and JG are just fantastic. I mean, like, I don't know what there is to not like about this episode. It wasn't boring. It wasn't slow. Didn't have too much of any of the characters I hated. So, I mean, it was just perfect.
And honestly, did Tuvok, his character, I mean, what a great way to earn a check. Just laying around in bed the whole time.
Exactly. He did not have to do much. He did have to get the curtain call like a bunch of hours early, probably.
Do all the makeup.
But he probably got to sleep all day, though. So he probably got to catch up out of sleep because just laying down.
Tim, just lay down here and just deliver like three lines.
Deliver three lines.
Yeah.
Wake him up. Wake him up. He fell asleep yet.
So, yeah, I think this is a great episode. What was fun is I don't think we're not really talking about it, but it is the idea of people. Some people think that, you know, fighting like boxing or MMA is barbaric, and other people seem to enjoy it. And then we also have now with football, people are worried about these football players getting concussions and how the NFL suppressed that information for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. That these players are getting concussions and they're so seriously being harmed, and like now even some players are coming out and talking about it. So, you know, how we use entertainment with people's injuries, you know, and it's like
America's funniest home video. The funniest ones are when people get hurt.
Yeah, I know. And the funny thing is, you know, I think boxing and MMA, I don't really have a real problem with it. These people, that's what they're all about. I don't think these guys would need to go hunting and kidnapping people. I think they'd have people, you know, ready and willing to prove themselves. I mean, you look at, you know, look at us today. I mean, we have people from all over the world that, you know, go to these MMA and train their ass off to become, you know, amazing fighters. Same thing with boxing, of course. Boxing's obviously has a more defined set of rules of what you can't do, you know, basically nothing with the legs or below the belt. But, you know, I don't think they really need to do that. I mean, I mean, obviously, it's kind of a callback of the Roman society when they used to just take prisoners and throw them into the ring.
Yeah.
He's like, here's a sword. And only the people who really wanted to live and had probably a decent health and they're in good enough shape that they could survive for a long time. So, I don't know.
It's definitely a callback to the, like, you know, in more ancient fighting times where it was like basically slavery. But because I mean nowadays, and that's what they thought. All the Federation people thought that they were just, hey, this just, you know, this is their job. They get paid for this, and nope, they don't. And they had to find out the hard way.
And it's funny that like the guy like The Rock would be on this, and you know, obviously he's got his start before he did acting into wrestling, and wrestling can be kind of like construed as a little bit acting, acting light.
Well, according to IMDb, a lot of his early credits were wrestling. Although he did show up on That 70s Show, in 1999, The Net, also 1999, more WWF, and then Voyager. So Voyager's his third, quote unquote, real acting gig that wasn't wrestling, because it's That 70 Show, The Net, then all the other ones are wrestling before Voyager. So I mean, and Voyager was in 2000. So yeah, it's like one of his earliest like acting gigs, which is pretty awesome.
Right, and I think it's like, if anything, is like, it's a hard thing to say, because I think, you know, like with any of these like MMA fights and boxing, obviously people really get pretty severely hurt sometimes. You know, they and some of them never return to fighting because they get hit or they get pounded on so hard they can't get back in the ring, not seriously. And obviously they put themselves in that position, you know, because it's something they wanted to pursue, and we eat that stuff up and we enjoy it, but there's a bit of bloodlust in our society that we desire to see that. And same thing with football, you know, obviously we're not seeing for bloodlust or something like that, but you know, people like to see some pretty, you know, hard hitting plays sometimes, and sometimes those guys get really hurt really bad. Obviously they're well compensated for it. They get paid very well, so it's not like they have any need for anything after they get, you know, after they retire. I mean, I think football players have the shortest career spans, actually. I think they only last about, 3 to 5 years most of the time? Players?
Probably, because it's so hard on the body compared to other sports.
We were just talking about this the other day.
Although Joe Montana played for a long time, though.
Yeah, he played for a while. And then I think it's Tom Brady with the Patriots. He's like 42, and he's been with them since he started.
Yeah, but he's exceptional. I mean, he's the top of it, you know. And he's,
I'm sure there are other, you know, less famous people who have been there for a while as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I know one of the Buffalo Bills defensive linemen, Bruce Smith, played for years and years, and he was a monster player. So he was on there he retired not recently, but within the last, you know, 10 years ish, 8 to 10 years. But my point only being is that some of them really get walloped on pretty hard. You know, I mean, there's hundreds of players. So.
Probably depends on your position too. So
position, how, if some just get a huge injury and they just can't get back. I mean, if you do something, you tear something really bad that just is never going to be the same, you probably aren't coming back. If you took a really bad hit to a leg or something like that, that just stops you from playing. So, I don't know. It's an interesting society thing, is that, you know, we do enjoy these things. We do know these people are being put in danger, and yet we do not turn away. So, but yet these people are well compensated and they've signed themselves up for it. So it's,
and they worked hard to get there in the first place too. So
It's not like they just, you know, that being kidnapped and thrown into the MMA ring or football field. So, I mean, it's something that people, you know, would trade anything to get into if they could.
Yeah, pretty much.
So it's a strange thing. So, yeah, I don't know. I that's the one thing I kept on hearing the remarks of, oh, this is barbaric during this episode. And I'm like, is it barbaric, or is it, you know, I guess the way they're doing it is barbaric.
Yeah.
But But if they open it up to a Ferengi way of doing it, more capitalistic way of making money, I think everybody would be very happy.
Maybe. But I mean, like, even the doctor was detesting it because he detests that Chakotay likes boxing. Right. But then again, the point of boxing is to basically knock someone out, which can cause brain damage. So, I mean, it's not.
Well, actually, most boxing matches don't ever end with a knockout. I mean, sometimes they do, but a lot of times it's just they have people taking scores of hits, and they basically say who got the best hits, and they rate them. And so by the end of certain rounds, you know, they call this person or that person won the match. So, I mean, sometimes they do get knocked out. Don't get me wrong.
Well, yeah, but I mean, most of the scores are done to the head, and like when you get hit with a boxing glove, like in the head, I mean, it's gonna jar your brain around because I mean, it's not.
Oh man, I know. Yes.
Well, you know, you get good points for that. I mean, sparring is a hell of a lot of fun, and yeah, some people aren't even allowed to do hits to the head in sparring, but I mean, you get some animals. And it's not always about hurting the other person. It's literally just how many hits, how quickly can you finish the rounds. And
yeah. It's a big endurance thing too for a lot of fighting. It's just how long you can last because a lot of times those fights when they go on real long, it's not really how good they are. It's just how physically fit they can continue to keep performing at that peak level constantly.
Yeah, at the level.
So.
For sure.
Do we want to get in the letter?
Yeah, let's do it. So this is from Brad, and he said, "Hello, Synthaholics. I just discovered your podcast recently, and I think it's great. You have a passion for your podcast, Trek, and good sci-fi in general, much like me. I would have responded using other means, but I have no social media for hundreds of reasons. A little background, I grew up on sci-fi because my parents loved it. I started watching TOS, Trek reruns in the early 80s, and my earliest memories are of... Demon in the Dark and Trouble with Tribbles. We had HBO then, so I've seen Wrath of Khan probably 200 times in my life, which is still not enough. I'm a completionist, and I love all things in the series for their merits and find their flaws endearing. Bad Trek is still great sci-fi. Trek has also helped me in many tough times in my life. In particular, when I first joined the military, I was stationed overseas and was not adjusting well. It was in the late 1990s. And not speaking the language or understanding the culture made me feel isolated and out of place. Deep Space Nine was still on the air, and watching it on AFRTS made me feel not so alone. These were soldiers stationed far from home in a hostile, unforgiving place, trying to make it their home, and I could relate. When Sisko finally accepted Bajor as his home, I understood that whenever I could... I understood that wherever I went could be my home if I made it one. Much of who I am today is shaped by Trek. My sense of morality and justice and my ethics and my compassion are reflected of the lessons I've learned. I hope to pass these lessons off to my sons as well as time goes forward. Your show is outstanding. It's funny. It's thoughtful. It's sincere. I had heard about it a few years ago, but it didn't come up until I was explaining what alcohol from replicators that didn't get you drunk. The idea of alcohol flavor without getting you totally shit-faced was horrifying to her. It dawned on me that I should look up your podcast, and I'm glad I did. I drive 350 miles each way every week, and I'm working my way through your back catalog. Your 5-part series on the Prime Directive is the best on the internet. And he said he had a few suggestions for our 200 Trek Wars episode, which I won't read those, so we can keep those as a surprise for the episode.
Secret. I've got a secret.
Yeah, so I said, feel free to read parts of the email, share it, keep up the good work, keep up on the show. I'll be listening every week, and I've subscribed to your YouTube channel. Live long and prosper, Brad.
Oh, man, that is a wonderful, very sweet letter. Thank you so much.
I like Brad. Brad's cool.
Yeah, it's great. Like, getting some, you know.
Hi, Brad.
And, you know, some great stuff, and he suggested that we talk about Tsunkatse, or Tuscany, which however you want to pronounce it.
Tuscany.
The Tuscan sun.
Under the Tuscan sun.
Suns. There are two, remember?
Suns.
Two balls, too, but, you know.
Yeah, and
partridge in a pear tree.
Yes. thank you for the nice comments, and I'm glad you enjoyed the Prime Directive series that we did.
That's awesome that you think it's the best on the internet. I don't know if I've seen any other do it, but if we're the only one on the internet, that still means we're the best.
Default. You won by default. Nobody else showed up.
Yeah, no one else did a great Prime Directive series, or at least one that wasn't five parts. So hopefully, that's awesome. We win. Maybe he's heard other Star Trek podcasts do it. That'd be kind of cool if we are the best out of a couple other people who've done it. I don't know. I haven't listened to a whole bunch of other Star Trek podcasts.
Well, that was the one thing is that we were going on and on because we kept on running into Prime Directive issues, and we're like, we don't really know fully what the Prime Directive is. Let's do look at all of it, and I kind of pushed Dave into that one.
Oh, that was great. I like it when you give me suggestions. I don't like to feel like I'm always demanding us to a certain episode, so I like it.
We're doing it this time.
I like it when we get suggestions from you and Holly for episodes to do. So, yeah, it's great. It was funny off – it might have been one of the outtakes I left in the episode. I was like, we haven't gotten an email saying that we've changed our lives, but at least Star Trek has changed this person's life. So that's great that Star Trek helped you realize that any place can be home if you make it one.
Yeah. And I didn't serve in the military as you did, but I did a lot of traveling when I was younger too. And I know the feeling when you're just with a bunch of people that, you can put up with, but maybe you're not your favorite people. You're not your family and friends back home, and you're just trying to make the best of it, and you're lonely, and you hear what's happening back home, and everyone's having a good time, and you just seem to be just like, I don't know, having a terrible time. So.
You know, you just described my situation.
I'm sorry, Holly.
It's okay.
I know
okay.
Exactly.
Holly's a military wife, so she can kind of relate. Spouse.
And they just recently moved
away from us.
So it's
equally heartbreaking for us because she moved away from us.
So everyone knows, like, I could have probably, I never did, but I could probably have walked to Holly's house. That's how close she was mm-hmm. to my house.
You could have easily walked to her house.
And she's on the other side of the country.
And I could walk 500 miles. I could walk 500,000 more.
And go over the Rocky Mountains. And
just like the people on the what was the last podcast left? The Donner Party.
That was a terrible.
Don't eat your friends. I won't go with you if you walk over the hills.
I take only the tasty ones.
I'm tasty to mosquitoes, so I don't know if you're part mosquito, Aaron. You might like me.
So why won't you eat me?
Do it now.
I'm sorry, Holly, that you're having a hard time. That's it's funny. Because I know you guys are off on your adventure out there and doing your thing, but I do forget about the fact that when you are away, and away from everybody that you're accustomed to, and even the landscape has changed, so it's a hard thing to
adapt to.
Yeah, it takes a while for sure. Yeah,
but you still get to hang out with us virtually once a week, which is kind of cool. I do.
And Holly's like, God damn it!
No, I'm really. You guys are like my touchback, and I've got family near-ish, and the military is tiny, and I've got people Cali bound, so cool. Hopefully they just live in a neighborhood that's not an hour away.
Yes, absolutely.
You still got to go see Dave Kish, who's also a listener.
Yes.
Yeah, you need to go hang out with him and his wife and kid. They're awesome, and they got great people that they know who are also geeks and gamers, so you should definitely go hang out with them in San Diego.
I know, but San Diego is still an hour and a half away.
I thought you lived in San Diego.
Technically, I live in San Diego County, but I'm like on the border of Orange County.
Gotcha.
The outskirts. Oh, nice.
Yeah, but you get Synthaholics listeners out there in California. You should go. Yes. You go see.
Synthaholic listeners, if you know places between San Diego County and Orange County, places that Holly should frequent, maybe gaming stores or geek-centric things, because this is the thing she loves to do. Let her know. Write us a letter.
There's actually
tell her where she can get another ton of books.
What's that geek trivia thing?
Oh, they have one out there?
They do. They hold it at a brewery. They didn't have great beer, but I don't have any friends to go with.
Throwing shade.
How can a brewery not have great beer?
I just didn't like any of them.
Because it wasn't Buffalo beer.
Well, I mean, I like Reds and I like Pilsners. Pilsberries.
And they're, were they all IPAs or what?
Yeah, mostly IPAs or like citrusy.
Yeah, it's a weird thing about like a lot of these breweries. They always make a lot of IPAs because the hops are probably easier. I don't know the full thing about it, but every time I had friends that made their own beer, it was always very hoppy. Mm-hmm. So I'm just, I do like an IPA here and there, but it's not my favorite. Yeah. So.
I like a good like a chocolatey stout every now and again.
Chocolate stout. You're probably not going to see a lot of that out there.
No, I don't probably think so. Although I did try, there's a brewery in San Diego that they sell some of the beers here on base. And I tried their Mermaid Red when Aaron and I did Aquaman. But alas, the beer was good. The episode.
Thanks again, Brad, for emailing us, and all for all you people out there who listen to the show and just want to get your voice out there. You can always feel free to email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. You can also send us a voice message and we can play that on the air like we did on our 100th episode. So, I mean, we haven't really gotten any other voice memos since then, so you can always feel free to send those in, because, I mean, if we get a bunch of them, we could literally do an episode just about voice messages and emails if we got enough of it at once. So that that would be kind of fun to do. That way it's a less forethought for us to do. But we have one episode before Discovery starts, and then it's Discovery every single week until it's over.
Are you ready? Are you I know ready? Because I'm not ready.
We're trying to talk to past guests and see if they can join us for some Discovery talk. I've got a couple lined up for the first couple episodes. I haven't reached out any further than that yet, but if you've been on the show before, I might be reaching out to you to join us. So,
lucky I'll beat you. Him to it and just lucky. Reach out to him. Huh? How can they find you, David?
Oh, you can find me online at the email again is at synthaholics@yahoo.com. You can check out our website where all of our information is. It's at synthaholics.com. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/group/synthaholics. You can find us on YouTube at youtube.com/synthaholics. And on Twitter, we are at the shows at Synthaholic Duo. Personally, I'm at David_J_Duncan. Aaron's at Blackbird2004. And Holly's at Lunar Thistle.
And please go to Apple iTunes, rate and view us. That would be wonderful. And if you could go to... Wunderbar. And then you could go to Patreon after you're done with that and check out our Patreon and throw a little money our way. We have been having some issues, some small defects in the equipment. The equipment's getting old, people. It's getting old.
Beginning year four soon.
Yeah, it's getting a little rough. So $1 a month, not much to ask. I'm sure you've spent more than that than...
You spend four times that much on your starbs.
Yes, exactly. So definitely, if you can throw it our way, we definitely appreciate it. Also, as well, if you can't do those couple things, tell a friend, tell a coworker, tell people of your family that might like podcasts. You know, podcasts.
Write a letter to old Saint Nick.
Yeah, write Santa. Tell him about it. Podcasts are just. Just if they don't know what a podcast is, it's like AM radio for millennials, except they swear a lot. That's about it.
Yes.
So, so if that's talk what
about
you're into.
Boob balls or boob bombs, whatever Holly was talking about.
I'm
boob
bombs. Pulling it off. Ball of tits.
Ball of tits. It's like bath bombs, but for tits, I guess. I don't know.
Buy that.
As you say, you should capitalize. You should watch old Greg figure out how to make that and capitalize on making bath bombs.
That would be great.
Yes.
Bath you could bombs call for them, men. Like the funk or something.
Yeah,
you got the funk.
When you got the funk. definitely let them know about Synthaholics. Yeah, so all those things are great. Do those things.
Do them proudly, as I'm sure Brad is doing, proclaiming the good news of Synthaholics and sending us the emails and telling us about how he became involved with science fiction, which is always great.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love it.
Well, thank you, Aaron and Holly, for joining me. Hopefully people will hear this episode, and hopefully between the three recording methods we're trying, that one of them will work.
Thank you for having us.
And thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all. Well, McCoy, my boy, come mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink. And we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had. We did it, maybe.
Yeah, hopefully nothing blew up.
If anything, the call recorder should have done it goodly, I think.
Goodly
enough.
So Holly, after we did the episode and we got off the thing, and I went back to playback on mine, and I was like, why am I not hearing anything? Because when we did our clap together, remember we had those two failed claps that I kept on counting wrong. So clap 1, 2, 5. So I saw the graphic of it recording, and I was like, okay, we're good. And then I go back to playback, I'm like, where the fuck is everything? And then it didn't come back in until back within the 40-minute mark and we were well into the episode. And I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be really hard.